A servant met her as she followed the visitor and his escort. The Kai bowed low. "Your Highness, I've been asked to fetch you." Ildiko motioned for the servant to follow as she strode by, keeping her quarry in sight as she headed to the manor's great hall.
"Who's our visitor?"
"A messenger from High Salur." She paused to stare at the servant. In the time she'd resided with Brishan at Sagara, Ildiko had taken pains to expand her knowledge not only of her adopted culture, but of its geography. Brishan's estate consisted of a summer palace turned fortress and a garrison town that supported the fortress with a body of Kai troops and their families. Sagara perched on a strip of the plains that bordered Belladine territory and protected a small population of Kai who farmed freshwater mussels from a nearby lake and produced the highly prized amaranthine dye coveted by both the Gowrie and the Belladine. After the attack on the trade road by Belladine mercenaries, Ildiko had shuddered at the idea of being so close and this vulnerable to any of Belawat's borders. Brishan had been quick to reassure her. "We're quite safe, wife. Despite Belawat's attempts to break our alliance, there are factions friendly to us within its ranks. Serevek of House Pangeon is one of those. His lands border mine, and his people benefit richly from us selling amaranthine to him for a good price. They resell it for a tidy profit to the aristocrats residing in the capital." Ildiko still wasn't quite convinced of their safety. "What's to stop them from just invading and seizing control of the lake?" Brishan's gold coin eyes had glittered in the solar semi-darkness. "Because the loss of life and spilling of Belladine blood would be a lot more expensive than just buying the dye from us. That, and we'd poison the lake if necessary. I admire Serevek. He was a master of the horse to a Belladine general before he inherited his father's lands. He understands strategy on both the battlefield and in trade negotiations. He won't jeopardize his holdings unless forced to by a declaration of war from his king or mine."
"Your Highness, the Hersigus awaits." The servant's remark interrupted Ildiko's recollection of that conversation, and this time it was she who followed him to the great hall, where Brishan waited with the messenger from High Salur. She found him standing by the enormous hearth, holding an unrolled scroll. Candlelight lent a glossy blue sheen to his dark hair and highlighted the teal and coral undertones in his grey skin. He glanced up from reading and smiled as Ildiko drew near. Ildiko hid her own smile at the messenger's wide-eyed stare as Brishan grasped her hand and pressed a kiss to her knuckles.
"I'm glad you're here, Ildiko," he said. "We've received an invitation from Lord Serevek to take supper with him tomorrow night at High Salur. Would you like to go?"
Coming from any other man, and the question would be rhetorical. In the game of diplomacy, which this invitation was, her wishes were not a consideration. Protocol demanded her presence. But Brishan was like no man Ildiko had ever known, Gowrie or Kai. His question was meant sincerely, and he'd accept her answer, even if she chose to decline.
"I'd love to go," she said. It would be the first time since her marriage to Brishan that she'd actually had supper instead of breakfast or lunch at night, or eaten with another person who wasn't Kai. She hoped they might serve dishes familiar to her. She'd grown used to most of the Kai cuisine she'd tried, but she missed those dishes she'd grown up with in the Gowrie court. Brishan took the scroll to a nearby writing table covered in maps and books. He signed the scroll and returned it to the High Salur messenger.
"Tell his lordship we will see him shortly after twilight."
The messenger bowed, glanced briefly at Ildiko a second time, and followed the Kai servants out of the hall. "I'll wager this isn't just a night to be spent between comrades catching up on the latest events." Ildiko joined Brishan at the table and accepted the goblet of wine he poured for her.
"I think it is, partly.
Brishan tapped his goblet against hers in a toast. "Believe it or not, there has been the occasional union between a Kai soldier and a Belladine merchant's daughter. But the marriage of Kai royalty to either Gowrie or Belladine royalty has never occurred until now. We are an odd couple. People will be curious." Ildiko sighed inwardly. Another long evening of even longer stares and furious whispers from those attending the dinner. Their roles would be reversed, with many wondering how Ildiko could stomach the sight of her feral-looking spouse. She knew to expect it, but the knowing didn't make it any easier. "Serevec is a curious sort, then?" Brishan led her to one of the comfortable couches set near the fireplace, and sat down beside her.
"Curious in that he believes knowledge is power. The more he knows, the less likely he is to be unpleasantly surprised."
"A cautious man."
"An intelligent one."
Ildiko tilted her head to the side. "You like him?" Brishan nodded.
"I do. He would make a valuable ally and a formidable enemy. Luckily for us both, we are amicable neighbours. For now."
They remained in the hall chatting of inconsequential things until Ildiko excused herself and rose. "I'm told two trade wagons have arrived from Haradis carrying food supplies. Your cook has stated one merchant's scales are suspiciously inaccurate. I'm off to resolve the problem." Brishan abandoned his seat as well and escorted her to the doors.
"And I'm riding with a guard to the southeast perimeters. For all that Serevec is friendly to me, others are not. There have been raids in the pasture lands, horses and cattle stolen. It could just be thieves, but I have my doubts."
A frisson of worry tightened Ildiko's chest. She clasped Brishan's arm. "You'll be careful."
It was a silly thing to say. Brishan was an experienced soldier, as adept at fighting as any of the Kai under his command. She'd seen that for herself when he'd saved her from a Belladine raider.
Still, she worried over him. He had become precious to her. Brishan twined a lock of her hair around his claws, letting it slide over his knuckles.
"You would come to my rescue if I needed it?"
She arched an eyebrow.
"I'd be a terrible rescuer, but yes, I wouldn't hesitate to come to your aid." "Don't sell yourself short, wife. I've seen you wield an axe."
Ildiko stepped closer and slid her arms over his broad shoulders in a loose embrace. His hair tickled her nose where she laid her head against his neck. "I'm serious, Brishan. Promise me you'll not get yourself killed or maimed out there." His hands rested hot on her lower back, and he breathed gently against her before stepping away. He'd lost the smile, but there was a gentleness to his hard features.
"I can't make that promise, Ildiko, but I can swear to do my best to come back with all arms and legs attached."
She frowned.
"Your head too, if you please." Brishan laughed then. "My head too."
"When will you return?"
"Just before midday, if I leave now. Plenty of time to sleep before we must ready ourselves to attend Serevec's supper."
Ildiko couldn't care less about some Belladine noble supper gathering. She just wanted to make sure she was awake when Brishan returned home. They parted ways outside the great hall, she to the bailey and he to the barracks and stables. She ate lunch and dinner alone, seated on the balcony that led from her room and overlooked the wild orange grove that spread from the back of the estate's main house to the edge of a bramble field. Brishan had given her a brief tour of the grove, or at least as much of a tour as the tangled undergrowth and a pair of slashing sickles allowed. The trees hung heavy with unpicked fruit and swarmed with wasps still flitting about in the encroaching twilight. Her husband had graciously braved a branch spiny with thorns and picked an orange for her. It was juicy and sour enough to make the back of her jaw clench and her eyes squinch closed. She loved it. Brishan had eyed her with a look of disgust.
Humans eat the most repulsive things.
Ildiko chose not to point out the many revolting aspects of baked scarpatine. Instead, she spat an orange seed in her hand and gave Brishin a sweet smile.
I'm guessing the Kai don't like oranges.
No, not at all.
Ildiko had surveyed the wild grove with a measuring eye.
We like oranges, even the sour ones, and the flowers make a lovely perfume and water coveted by women. Well, not as valuable as your amaranthine, oranges are a currency crop for farmers. It might be worth putting the labour into this grove and selling the produce.
He'd shown interest in her idea, but hadn't yet been convinced. Sagara's labour force was split between its military presence and the civilians who made the amaranthine. He didn't think he had enough population to spare for the grove, but he'd consider it. Ildiko admired the orange trees, their dark silhouettes gilded in silver from the moon's light. Now and then, a crow would shoot up from the canopy of leaves, circle the treetops only to disappear once more into the branches' hidden sanctuary. The shadows of an owl flew past on silent wings, its eyes as bright as Brishin's when he laughed at something she said. This was the first time they'd been parted from each other for more than an hour or two that wasn't reserved for sleeping. She missed his presence, the smooth cadence of his voice, the graceful movement of his narrow hands with their lethal black claws. Even the scent of his hair when he held her close, and she breathed him into her nostrils. She'd sensed the anger simmering inside him from the moment he'd witnessed her kill the Scarpatine until they'd reached Sagara. He'd said nothing to her about the incident, other than to inquire about her well-being, but it wasn't a stretch to assume Sekhmis had something to do with the nasty insect hiding among Ildiko's bedsheets. Pride had made her offer up a half-hearted argument against leaving for Sagara right away, but she'd been more than happy to acquiesce to Brishin's insistence that they leave that evening. Sagara was an austere place compared to Haradis, and lacked many of its creature comforts. It also lacked Sekhmis, which, for Ildiko, made it a place far superior to the Kai Royal Palace. When Sinwe came to help her undress and get ready for bed, Ildiko waved her away and sent her to her own room. She was neither tired nor sleepy, but she did miss her husband. His chambers adjoined hers, and he told her more than once she was welcome to enter at any time she wished. She did so now, pausing at the doorway to admire the space. The furniture was plain but comfortable, the bed large with a thick mattress and piles of blankets and furs. As with his bedroom in the royal palace, this one had a hearth with a table and two chairs set before it. A half-finished game of Butcher's Covenant lay on the table. Brishin was a far better strategist than Ildiko and had won every game so far, except one. She suspected he'd let her win that one. Ildiko returned to her room to strip off her clothes and slip on her night trail. From the chest at the foot of her bed, she retrieved one of the three precious books she'd brought with her from Prisid. A tome of psalms and poems. She'd read it so many times, she'd memorized most of them, but they were no less enjoyable with each reading. She'd read in her husband's bedroom until he came back from the border. The linens on Brishin's bed were cool and crisp, the fur soft as she tucked herself in and piled the pillows behind her back so she could read. She left the doors leading to his balcony open. His bedroom faced east, and early morning sunlight spread across the plains until it spilled over the balcony and into the room. Ildiko blew out the single candle by the bed and settled in to read by the light of the sun. She was halfway through the book, her eyes heavy with sleep, when the bedroom door opened. Brishin stood at the threshold, dressed down to under tunic and trousers, his feet bare and his hair damp. He leaned against the door frame and crossed his arms.
"Woman of day, you waited for me."
Ildiko closed her book and offered him a drowsy smile.
Relief and happiness coursed through her.
Prince of Night, you've come back to me, your head intact.
I promised I'd try.
Brisson strode across the room, motioning for her to stop when she made her swing out of bed.
Move over.
Surprised, she did as he said, and made room for him on the side of the bed she'd previously occupied. He slid in next to her and covered them both with the blankets. Ildiko turned on her side and murmured her approval when he tucked her into his body and nuzzled his face against the slope where her shoulder met her neck. They'd slept like this during their travels to both Haradis and then Sagara, his lithe body both a comfort and a pleasure to lie against in slumber. Ildiko was halfway to a dead sleep when Brisson's soft words in her ear brought her awake.
Sleep here each day, Ildiko.
A sweet warmth suffused her. She entangled her legs with his and hugged his arm to her waist.
As you wish. Just don't steal the blankets.
Chapter 16. High Salur nestled in a col between the steep sides of a pair of mountains. Andrisi oaks marched up the slopes, enrobing the sides in a dusky green cloak. These trees were different from the Solaris oaks that fronted Sagara, shorter with thick trunks and small leaves shaped like pendants. The Andrisi oaks grew low and wide, instead of tall, and were interspersed with more statuesque firs. The encroaching twilight cast their shadows long, and Brisson pointed out the shapes of red-shouldered hawks perched in their canopies to sleep, while the silent owls took their place in the hunt. A narrow path snaked up the windward slope, with multiple switchbacks that made it easier for horses to navigate the slope's pitch. Trees lined the path on either side with an understory of thorny bramble, thicker than a hair mat, and guaranteed to rip anything bigger than a fox to shreds. A rider, wanting to reach High Salur with his and his horse's hides intact, had to stay on the road. And the road was observed. Twilight had given way to night by the time Brisson, Ildiko and their escort crossed a gentle stream and passed through a narrow wind gap to reach the fortress carved directly into the mountain. High Salur's battlements and graceful towers rose above them, dark silhouettes against the evening sky. Lanterns and torches blazed along the walls and lined the cobble path that led to the main gate. Brisson squinted against the light and announced himself and Ildiko to the guards at the gate. Once inside, they crossed the pomerium to another high wall and heavily guarded gate. Brisson didn't have to announce himself a second time. The gate swung wide, and he guided his party into a courtyard edged by workshops, a stable, a smithy, and a small temple. Brisson relaxed in the saddle. So far, the Kai remained peaceful neighbours with the Kingdom of Belawat. The raiders who attacked him and Ildiko on the trade road had worn the coat of arms of the Belladine royal house under their armour. Whatever hostility the Belladine king held for Brisson's marriage to a Gowri royal, that hostility had not yet made it to these borders or this Belladine lord. No one had yet demanded Brisson and his Kai guard disarm. It was a display of trust, and one Brisson reciprocated by bringing his wife to this dinner. A steward greeted them at the great doors that opened to High Salur's interior. Brisson dismounted and helped Ildiko off her horse. He gave instructions to the soldiers who'd accompanied them on their journey, and they followed another livery servant to a stone building jutting from the inner wall and occupied by Belladine soldiers, who watched their Kai guests with wary but curious gazes. For all that High Salur was unmistakably a fort, much like Sagara, its interior was luxuriously appointed. The servant left Brisson and Ildiko in a receiving room fit for royalty. Heavy tapestries, free of moth holes and layers of dust, lined the walls, and numerous chairs and benches had been set around the chamber, inviting large numbers of guests to sit. Tiny ceramic pots rested on iron tripods. Stunted candles placed below them heated oils, perfuming the air with the scent of herbs that overrode the reek of tallow from the lit torches lining the wall. Brisson glanced at Ildiko.
"What do you think?"
She scraped her hood back, revealing the intricate braiding and beads Sinwe had woven into her hair. Her eyes moved back and forth as she surveyed their surroundings. "I suspect it's well defended, and likely well stocked with provisions, and a heavily guarded water source beyond the stream."
Startled, Brisson blinked and then laughed.
Ildiko gave him a look he could actually interpret now. He was growing used to his wife's face.
"What's so funny?"
"You." He traced the embroidery on her cloak's edge with one claw. "You never fail to surprise me. I thought you'd remark on the architecture or the furnishings. Serevek is well-heeled, and it shows. Instead, you note the defences and conjecture about High Silur's ability to withstand a siege. Plans of conquest, wife?" She snorted delicately and raised her chin.
"Hardly. I'm as much an admirer of a pretty garden, fancy windows and a fine couch as the next woman. But there's also beauty and purpose. An enemy would lose many men trying to conquer this place."
Brisson couldn't dispute that observation. Sagara had its own strengths that High Silur lacked, and the reverse could be said of High Silur. They were equally matched in their abilities to launch attacks and defend against them. Such equality kept him and Serevek on friendly terms, and Brisson hoped it remained that way. The doors separating the receiving room from the rest of the interior were thrown open, and a man, dressed in brown leather and silks the colour of fresh blood, strode through them. Brisson caught Ildiko's soft gasp as Serevek, Lord Pangian of Belawat, grasped Brisson's arm and yanked him into a brief, crushing embrace. Had Brisson been human instead of Kai, Serevek would have cracked a few of his ribs. Serevek grinned, flashing the square human teeth that were often a source of amusement among the Kai of Sagara. Brisson had the instant realization that it was Serevek himself who had made him think of Ildiko's smile as equine. Lord Pangian was a big human, a little taller than Brisson, with massive shoulders and a slight bow to his legs that indicated he'd been tossed onto a horse's back at a young age and rarely left it since. Brisson's greatest exposure to humans had been mostly isolated to Serevek and his cavalry, with its horse culture as strong as the Kai's. The humans even rolled their eyes in that bizarre way that horses did when frightened. They sometimes flashed their square teeth in laughter that reminded him of a whinny. Serevek slammed a hand between Brisson's shoulder blades, hard enough to make a weaker man stagger.
"Brisson, welcome."
Brisson bowed briefly.
"Serevek, we appreciate the invitation."
He glanced at his silent, wide-eyed wife. "My wife and her segase, Ildiko." Serevek executed a courtly bow with flourish.
"A pleasure, Your Highness."
His gaze passed swiftly over Ildiko, and his voice softened and deepened even more.
"Word reached us of your marriage. Your husband is a fortunate man. Welcome to High Silur."
Brisson felt his smile stiffen. He pressed his hand against Ildiko's back. He might not be able to discern the subtle emotions in the human's gaze, but he wasn't deaf. Blatant male interest saturated Serevek's voice. Ildiko bowed. "Lord Pangian, Brisson has spoken most favourably about you. Thank you for inviting us to your lovely home." Serevek motioned for them to accompany him through the doors and into a brightly lit hall crowded with humans and bisected by a long trestle table set for dinner. The other dinner guests were low-ranking noblemen and squires from the Belladine towns that received protection from High Silur. They gawked at both Brisson and Ildiko. As the only Kai in the crowd, Brisson had an idea of what Ildiko had dealt with at the palace and the circumstances she lived in at Sagara. His admiration for her unflappable aplomb grew. It wasn't an easy thing being an object of such focused curiosity, especially when that curiosity was mixed with distrust and revulsion. Serevec made the necessary introductions, and soon Ildikó was whisked away to another part of the hall by a flock of wives and daughters eager to hear how the niece of a Gari king ended up the wife of a Kai prince. Brishan found himself alone with Serevec, the other men reluctant to interact with him beyond the initial introductions. They were of no concern to him, beyond the possibility they might be future military targets. Serevec lifted two goblets of wine from a tray presented by a servant and passed one to Brishan.
I won a sizable wager, thanks to you.
They toasted each other in common and drank. Brishan peered into his cup. The wine was exceptional.
How so?
He caught Serevec's smirk.
Bets were placed that a certain Kai prince would balk at the last minute and refuse to take a human woman to wife.
Bets were placed throughout the Kai kingdom on the same thing, except it was whether or not the Gari bride would balk.
The odds? 60-1. Brishan whistled. Those are plump winnings.
Another servant passed with a tray. Serevec drained his cup and replaced it with another full one from the tray. His entire demeanour oozed satisfaction.
They are. I used the winnings to buy a young stallion from Nadiza's lightning herd as breeding stock.
Brishan made a note to himself that should another wedding between a Kai and human take place any time soon, he wanted in on Serevec's betting pool.
You'll get fast ponies from that one. I'm counting on it.
Serevec's expression turned grim.
Rumour has it you encountered trouble on your return to Haradis.
Unease rippled up Brishan's back. He trusted Serevec as much as he trusted any human, except for Ildikó.
Rumour is correct in this instance. You've those among your kinsmen who don't approve of the marriage and the alliance it forges, though I think the king of Belawat worries for nothing. We sell our amaranthine to any willing to pay, Gari or Belladine. You are all simply humans to the Kai.
Serevec snorted.
I think we both know it has nothing to do with the die. Your father's kingdom is a barrier between Belawat and Gaur. The Kai were neutral until this marriage.
Brishan snagged a second goblet of wine, but this time only sipped at it. Our deaths would be useless. The marriage is simply a gesture of good faith. He didn't say aloud what both he and Serevec knew. Many a war had started over gestures of good faith. He watched, intrigued, as his host suddenly pasted on a false smile and slid a brief glance at the clusters of other guests who watched them.
You and I are having an amusing conversation.
Brishan took the hint and flashed an equally false smile of his own.
Any warning I might give you would be seen as treason, and I don't fancy having my head mounted on a gate spike outside the palace walls,
Serevec said between his teeth.
But, as one comrade to another, I would tell you to watch your back. Belawat disapproves of this alliance, and will try again to make that disapproval known in the most obvious way it can.
Brishan's eyes narrowed. Kill the least important members first, and move up the hierarchy until someone finally got the message.
It won't stop with me and Ildikó. No, your deaths are simply the warning trumpet. The Belladine and the Gari were equally matched in martial prowess until this latest trade alliance. The pendulum swung in Gaur's favour when Bas Haradis agreed to more than just friendly trade.
Removed from court machinations and political negotiations by both distance and disinterest, Brishan hadn't thought much of their neighbours' sudden enthusiasm for offering access to their ports and moving Kai goods, especially the valuable amaranthine dye, on their ships without heavy tariffs and fees. The Gari must have received information that Belawat was planning an offensive against them. My father would have considered the promise of assistance a fair trade for moving the dye without tariff. Both countries could fatten their coffers in no time. But to the Gari, The military alliance is far more important than the trade one. The false smile slowly slipped from Serevek's face.
Indeed. Jador is known throughout the kingdoms as a stubborn, wily king. However, wipe out the heir and spares to this throne, and he'll break.
Brishan remained silent. What the human kingdoms believed was partially true. Jador was a stubborn, wily bastard, and the continuation of his line meant everything to him. They, however, had not taken Sekhmis into account, and the Kai King's weakness didn't mirror those of his formidable queen.
"Why are you telling me this?" he asked Serevek. "You could kill me and Ildiko now, and earn the gratitude of your king."
Serevek snorted.
"King Rodan's gratitude doesn't manifest as coin, lands or favour. The most I'd get from it is a parade."
Disdain curled his upper lip.
"As if I crave such a thing. Crowds throwing laurels at me and scaring my horses."
The lip curl transformed into a sly smile.
"You, on the other hand, make me rich with your dyes and your friendship. You're far more valuable to me as friend than foe."
Brishan laughed. The first time he'd met Serevek, he liked him. He was as odd as any other human, in both appearance and expression. But he was a soldier with a mind for strategy and a penchant for honesty that was sometimes noble, sometimes opportunistic, sometimes both. It was these that Brishan related to and admired. He clinked his cup against Serevek's. To the value of profit and friendship. He drank the wine, the fear coating his tongue, giving it a metallic taste.
Brishan didn't fear for his safety. He could handle himself in a fight and would be difficult to kill, but he wasn't the only target.
While Ildiko had the heart of a warrior, she was untrained, untried, and unprepared to fend off an attack from a determined assassin. He'd laid down his life for her, protect her with sword and axe, teeth and claws if necessary.
Still, he was only mortal, and there was a chink in even the best-made armour.
Serevek pulled him from his grim musings with a tap on the shoulder.
"We'll speak of more pleasant things."
He turned his gaze to Ildiko nearby, laughing in the company of other human women.
"Your wife is a stunning creature. How is it such a woman, with ties to the Gowrie royal house, remains unmarried until now?"
Brishan shrugged, unsure if listening to his host wax enthusiastic about Ildiko's beauty was a pleasanter turn of the conversation. "She occupies the same role in the pecking order that I do. We are of no importance to the royal line, but we're useful in political manoeuvring and kept in reserve for just the right moment." He had never resented the notion. In fact, his relative unimportance had offered him far more freedom than any given to his brother and bestowed on him an exceptional wife. Unfortunately, someone now considered him and Ildiko of great importance in the worst possible way. His conversation with Serevek remained light-hearted until the dinner announcement. Serevek sat at the head of the table, with Ildiko and Brishan on either side of him as guests of honour. Brishan split his attention between the mayor of one of the Belladine towns, who doggedly engaged him in conversation despite his obvious unease at being seated next to a Kai, and Ildiko, whose laughter and animated responses to Serevek's bantering slowly soured the wine on his tongue. She was comfortable here, in her element amongst humans like her. The differences between them never seemed so obvious as now. And they went far deeper than appearance. Brishan had told himself that as she grew used to him and his people, she'd adopt their ways, understand their culture, and slowly become more Kai herself. Watching Ildiko interact now with the Belladine guests made him realise he'd fooled himself into thinking such a thing. She displayed a natural ease he never saw at Sagara, though the relationship between her and his household was both peaceful and respectful. Her ability to speedily adapt to new people and circumstances had lured him into a false sense of contentment. His own sense of isolation amongst Serevet's guests made him wonder if Ildikó was lonely. It was close to dawn before the gathering broke up, and guests gathered their things in preparation to leave. Ildikó hid a yawn behind her hand as Brishan helped her with her cloak.
"Did you enjoy yourself?" he asked.
She rested her hand in the crook of his elbow and leaned her head on his arm. "Thoroughly," she said. "And your luck held. No potatoes at dinner."
He nuzzled the top of her head. "Proof that there are merciful gods, or at least a merciful cook."
Serevek approached them after bidding farewell to another couple.
"It's been a long time since I visited Sagara. Has your wife had much time to put a woman's mark on it yet?"
Brishan recognised a hint when he heard one, and Serevek's was less than subtle.
"A little. Let me return the favour and invite you to share a meal with us."
Serevek's reply came as no surprise.
"I heartily accept. Name the day and time. I'll be there. I look forward to meeting your lieutenant again. A fascinating woman, that Anuzet."
By the time they descended the mountainside and tracked a path through the tall drop-seed grass towards Sagara, it was early morning, and the sun cut a blinding swathe of light across the plains. While the entire Kai troop retreated into the depths of their cloaks and hoods, Ildikó dropped her hood and turned her face to the sun. Eyes closed, she bathed in its rays with a smile. Brishan watched her silently for a moment before speaking.
"Do you miss human companionship, Ildikó?"
She opened one eye to stare at him.
"Sometimes. Your people, however, have been very welcoming to me. Except my mother."
"Your words, not mine," she said with a smile. "But it would be nice not to flounder so often or listen so closely to voices because I can't always read Kai expressions."
"It's been a trial for you."
The words felt heavy on his tongue. He wanted her to deny them. Ildikó shook her head. "No, simply a challenge. There's an easiness to being among familiar things and people. You don't have to try as hard." Though he agreed with her about the difficulty in reading expressions, he dealt with the same when interacting with humans. He offered a counter-argument.
"We smile as you do, frown as you do, laugh and joke as you do."
This time, she opened both eyes and sat straighter in the saddle. "True, but I think a lot of human expression comes from the eyes, how they move, blink, change colour with emotion. We learn to read such signs from birth. It becomes second nature. I have a difficulty with the Kai, because your eyes don't change. If they move, I can't tell. If they change colour, I don't notice it. Do the Kai weep when they grieve?" It was as if she'd cracked the lock on a chest he'd been trying to pick for years. The eyes. The key to understanding humans was learning to read their dreadful eyes. The same could be said of the Kai. "You have that mysterious smile again, husband." She arched an eyebrow.
"You've made me consider something I hadn't before. We have a lot to learn from each other, wife."
Ildikó stared at him for a moment before pulling her hood back over her head. "I'm eager to learn."
"So am I," he said.
By the time they made it through Sagara's inner gates, Ildikó was asleep in the saddle, kept upright purely by her body's instinctive memory of how to ride. Brishan carried her upstairs to her chambers and left her with an equally sleepy Sinue to prepare for bed. He didn't expect her to join him later, so she surprised him by appearing before him as he sat on the edge of his bed, pondering the information Serevek had given him. Dressed in one of her white night trails, she nudged his knees apart until she stood between his legs. Her scent, clothes and the green of dropseed seeped into his nostrils. Brishan tilted his head up.
I thought you'd be asleep in your bed.
Her hands were soft on his cheeks, fingertips stroking delicate lines and swirls across his cheekbones and temples. He closed his eyes as she threaded his hair through her fingers. Am I no longer welcome in your bed? Brishan sighed his pleasure as her hands tracked past down his neck to his shoulders and began to knead.
Don't be foolish, wife.
What troubles you, Brishan?
Ildiko's magical hands travelled into his scalp, massaging gently.
Brishan moaned. You've been acting strangely ever since the dinner at High Salure. What did Lord Serevec tell you?
It was hard to think while Ildiko caressed him into a stupor. Who knew that something so simple as a scalp massage would reduce him to a clod-pated idiot? He wrestled his thoughts together. At some point, he'd have to tell her of Bellawatt's plans. While he disliked the idea of scaring her, ignorance had killed more than its fair share of people, and he wanted her aware of the danger. Still, there was time enough to disturb her sleep tomorrow. For now, he'd offer something else, something that would disturb his sleep for many nights to come.
Lord Pangean called you stunning.
For a moment, the massaging stopped, only starting again when Brishan clasped her wrists and nudged her to continue. The feeble light cast by stray sunbeams that crept through the closed window shutters revealed the shadows of a blush on her cheeks.
Did he? That was very kind of him.
His homely wife. Beautiful, yet not. Stunning to a man whose gaze had caressed her from head to toe, and whose voice had proclaimed both approval and interest.
Or simply very truthful.
Ildiko laughed and tugged teasingly on a few strands of his hair.
Oh, my husband, what a silver tongue you have.
Her fingers traced the curves of his ears, sending goose flesh across his back and down his arms. His eyes closed as he sank into the sensation. A question that lingered in the back of his mind since Serevec had first come through the doors to greet them rushed to the forefront. Brishan opened his eyes to meet Ildiko's smiling gaze.
And Serevec, Ildiko, would human women think him handsome?
Twin frown lines marred her brow before fading as she pondered his question.
Honestly, extremely handsome. A seeping cold settled into Brishan's blood at her words.
That he's wealthy and intelligent as well doesn't hurt. That he's also unmarried puts a target on his back for every Belladine matchmaker in a 9-league radius.
She gave Brishan a light-hearted grin. Such a human smile. So much like Serevec's.
Why do you ask?
He couldn't answer her. The impetus for his question had been sparked by a jumble of emotions and thoughts. He needed time to sort them out, make sense of them to himself, before he could make sense of them to her. The clearest emotions he had now were regret. Regret that he'd returned the offer of dinner to the Belladine Lord, and the unshakable certainty he'd invited a wolf among them.
Brishan?
Ildiko's smile had vanished. She worried her lower lip between her teeth. Brishan had the stray thought that if a Kai had done such a thing, they'd turn their mouth into a bloody mess. He shrugged.
Just curious. I've had little interest in humans until now. With a human wife, it will do me good to learn more about them.
She started to answer him, but was stopped by another yawn, which she hid behind her hand. Brishan rose and folded back the bed covers.
In with you, he said. You're asleep on your feet, and my head aches from all the sunlight.
Ildiko scooted across the bed to the side she claimed. She was asleep the moment she snuggled into her pillows. Brishan used that boon to strip naked.
Unsure of how she might react, and not wishing to scare her back to her chamber, he always slept half-clothed beside her. It was hot and uncomfortable, but worth it to have her in his bed. This time, he slept as he usually did when he was alone. He slipped under the covers and pulled her against him. Her braid slid across his arm, a colourful serpent. He captured it and wound its length around his forearm before letting it unwind and fall away to shelter behind Ildiko's slender back.
"I'm not human, wife,"
he whispered into the darkness. Shock rounded his eyes at Ildiko's response, slurred with sleep and nearly incoherent.
"But you're still mine, husband."
Chapter 17. If there was anything more odorous than the amaranthine dyehouse, Ildiko had yet to learn of it. She covered her nose with a handkerchief and followed the master dyer into the billowing clouds of choking steam that poured off the tops of open kettles suspended over fires. The smells of salt, soda ash, and shellfish combined to make her eyes water and her throat close. Kai labourers worked in teams, taking turns at tending fires, dunking cloth in boiling vats of amaranthine, and setting the cloth to dry on wooden horses. The house's muddy floor looked like an emptied battlefield before all the blood washed away in a rainstorm. Puddles of water in shades from palest pink to deep ruby splashed across her boots as she trudged through the muck. She was far too busy trying to keep her balance to pay much attention to the stares her presence drew. Anuzette muttered under her breath as she followed Ildiko. It would have been easier to have someone deliver samples of cloth to the fortress. Ildiko chose not to answer her, preferring to keep her mouth closed and the odour of the dye off her palate as long as possible. It would, indeed, have been much easier to order samples brought to the fortress. But Ildiko wanted to see the dye houses and learn how the Kai made their valuable commodity that made the human kingdoms covet the vivid amaranthine. She listened closely as the master dyer, a weathered Kai with hands permanently painted reddish-purple, described the process of extracting the dye from the freshwater bitter mollusk they fished from the nearby lake, and dyeing the stacks of bleached linen, wool, and silk stored in another room. It was messy, smelly, sometimes dangerous work, involving boiling the mollusks, racking the slime and impurities from the top, straining the dyes, and boiling them again with salt and soda ash. Fabric dyed in the jewel-toned magenta was stretched on the wooden horses in various states of drying. The master dyer had explained to her and Anuzette how the amaranthine didn't fade after years in sunlight as other dyes did, but instead grew more vibrant over time with the saturation of light. Ildiko thought it ironic how a people who shunned the daylight were known for creating something that grew more beautiful with exposure to it. Mollusk slime, racked from the top of the boiling dye, was pushed into a noxious pile near one of the middens. The congealing heap glistened in the moonlight, glowing green from the thousands of buzzing flies that swarmed its surface. The smell sent Ildiko's stomach into an endless tumble, and she turned away before she lost her breakfast. Anuzette stood beside her, hand over her nose, a thunderhead of disapproval darkening her brow. "That bow-legged Belladine rooster isn't worth this." Ildiko silently agreed, but she wasn't here solely to handpick a gift of hospitality for Serevek's visit. This was one of four principal dye houses in the Kai Kingdom and under Brishan's guardianship. Ildiko felt it her duty as his wife to learn some small thing about the product that had secured an alliance between her people and his, and this marriage between them. She inhaled a grateful breath of clean air when the dye master led them outside and away from both middens and the pungent steam rolling out of the kettles. He pointed to another set of vats. These planted on the ground with no fires beneath them. Kai dyers used pulleys to raise and lower dripping cloth into more of the dye.
"This is a cold dye stage, Your Highness.
The colour has been racked and strained and left to sit in the sun for 11 days. We dye the silks in this, Amaranthine.
Ildiko drew closer to one of the vats and peered into a contained sea of magenta-coloured liquid. The dye shimmered under the glow of hanging lanterns strung from poles driven into the ground. Her typical everyday garb reflected the colours she preferred. Blacks and greens, dove greys, and the ambers and browns of autumn. She had never before favoured reds or pinks, but staring at the lustrous amaranthine tempted her to consider a scarf in that colour at a later date. She leaned further into the vat.
Be careful you don't fall in, Your Highness.
The dyer's warning came too late. While Ildiko didn't pitch headlong into the vat, the necklace she wore slipped its clasp and fell into the colour with a gentle plop. Its onyx cabochon and chain sank, leaving behind an expanding pattern of circular waves to mark where it fell.
Oh no!
Ildiko didn't hesitate and plunged her arms all the way into the vat until the dye lapped at her collarbones. Heedless of the dyer's and Anuzet's cries, she flailed in the dye, fingers clutching until she caught the tail end of the sinking chain on which the cabochon hung. She jerked it out of the vat, splashing dye across her neck and the underside of her jaw. The necklace hung from her dripping fingers, and she lifted it to show Anuzet.
Got it!
She crowed triumphantly. The master dyer stared at her silently, features pinched. Anuzet also stared at her, but with eyes narrowed and lips alternately twitching and compressing as she held back her laughter. Ildiko glanced down at herself, soaked to the skin in dye. Her green tunic had turned a muddy brown, and where the colour had washed bare skin, she was painted an interesting plum shade. She looked again to Anuzet, whose sharp teeth flashed in a wide grin. The master dyer didn't share in her amusement. The pinched look had been replaced by a wide-eyed stare and a face gone pale as old ash. Even Ildiko couldn't mistake his dread. She hastened to assure him.
No harm done, Master Sote. Nothing a good scrubbing with soap and hot water won't fix.
Ildiko almost smiled, but changed her mind at the last moment. She might not possess the fangs the Kai sported, but that didn't mean they found her smile any more reassuring than she found theirs. Anuzet snorted.
Don't count on it, Highness. Remember what Sote said earlier? And you've seen the dyers here. The amaranthine holds fast. Cloth, skin, hair. You'll be an even more unusual colour for several days.
Brishan had once said her skin reminded him of the bitter mollusk the Kai boiled to release the dye. Ildiko raised a bright pink arm, turning it one way and then the other. Her clothing was ruined, but at least now she could brag she had colour to her skin. She shrugged and tucked the broken necklace into her bodice.
"Might I borrow a dry cloth, please?" she asked the dyer.
Master Sote leapt to do her bidding, as if shot from a crossbow. In moments she clutched two towels while Anuzet stood attendance, holding a spare set. Her dip into the dye vat cut their tour short. Once dried, Ildiko apologised for the trouble and promised a fearful Master Sote that the Hersigus would not be angry and skin him for saddle leather just because his wife managed to tint herself pink in his dye house. Sote was all that was polite and accommodating as he escorted her and Anuzet to where their mounts waited. But Ildiko had the distinct impression he couldn't get rid of them fast enough. She mounted her horse, ignoring the raised eyebrows and gawking stares of the rest of their escort. Anuzet handed her cloak to her.
You're still damp, Highness. The cloak will keep you from getting cold.
And keep her from distracting the Kai guardsmen who'd accompanied them from Sagara to the dye house and tried not to be too obvious in their gaping at her. Ildiko sniffed and wrapped the cloak snugly around herself. She didn't regret her actions. They had been instinctive and careless, true, but the necklace was precious.
a last gift from her mother before she died. Ildiko would have dived headfirst into a vat of boiling horse piss to retrieve it. Still, she didn't relish the idea of her neck and arms being stained the colour of young plum for a fortnight. They travelled the main road to the manor, the young Solaris oaks silent sentinels to their passing. The trees gave way to a series of earthenworks and masonry walls that formed Sagara's outer redoubt. Behind the barriers perched one of two stables that housed the many horses kept at Sagara, and a set of barracks that provided hearth and roof for those soldiers who'd chosen not to live on the lake shore. Cheers, whistles and catcalls sounded nearby. Ildiko had heard them before, when she'd ventured out onto one of the balconies to admire the landscape, or the pattern of stars that wheeled above her. She glanced at Anuzette. "What is that?" Anuzette called out a command, and their party turned as one toward the sounds. She pointed to a low earthen wall, on which several Kai either stood or sat, and watched something beyond Ildiko's line of sight. They followed the curve of the wall and paused at a wide entrance that opened onto a makeshift training area. Archers' targets shared space alongside one wall with straw men in various states of dismemberment. Weapons of every type, from wood to steel, occupied another space. There were other contraptions as well, items that looked like they were used for training from horseback. But in the dim torchlight flickering across the arena, Ildiko could only guess at their purpose. The cheers and shouts that drew her attention were for the combatants in the middle of the arena. 9 pairs of Kai faced off against each other, each man or woman intent on grappling their opponent into submission. The men were dressed down to simple linen cloths that girded the loins and were knotted at the waist. The women wore similar clothing, except for the addition of a sleeveless gambeson cut to above the navel. Quilted and layered, it protected the breasts like a padded breastplate. Sinuous and muscular, the battling Kai reminded her of cats. The light from the torches cast the combatants in high relief. Their skin glistened with sweat as they crashed together, bent, twisted, and threw each other to the ground in multiple attempts to win the match. Anuzette tapped Ildiko on the shoulder and pointed to one of the battling pair. "There is Brishin, Your Highness. He fights Neferitsyn, a difficult opponent to wrestle." Ildiko guided her horse to a better spot so she could see. Brishin and Neferitsyn were locked in a knot of arms and legs, muscles straining as each tried to bring their opponent to the ground. Not cats, she thought. Eels, very much alive and aggressive. They wound around each other, wavy and serpentine, as if their bones had softened and stretched until they could bend and twist in a combat so subtle it seemed more dance than fight and looked utterly inhuman. Like the other Kai in the arena, Brishin wore only the linen loincloth. He'd scraped his hair back and tied it at the nape. The style highlighted the sloped almond shape of his eyes and the high curve of his cheekbones. He was shiny with sweat and streaked with dirt. A handsome man still, despite the grime. The thought brought Ildiko up short. This wasn't the first time she'd noticed her husband's appearance in such a way. She'd done so before, 3 evenings past, and then she'd called him beautiful. They had shared a bed, though they had done nothing more than sleep. Ildiko had quickly grown used to Brishin's presence beside her, the heat of his body beneath the covers. He was a peaceful sleeper, no thrashing or sighs, no snoring. She sometimes wondered if he or any of the Kai dreamed as humans did. After their return from Hyselur and Serevek's dinner, she'd fallen asleep as soon as Brishin ordered her under the covers. Unlike every